I wrote this book with the self-exploration exercises as a way of giving people a chance to make discoveries about how they really feel. I have an exercise called rocking chair, where you imagine that you're a healthy 70-year-old and looking back on your life. And in one scenario, you had a child and the other one you didn't. What did you like and what did you not like about your life? These things allow people to connect to the unconscious, just imagination. You have to be intellectual. You have to look at pros and cons. You have to look at, can we afford this? Does it work with our lives? And so on. But if you only go by the practical and you're not finding out, how do I feel about this? What do I want? You don't have enough information to go on. Sometimes when people are stuck, they actually know their answer and they don't want to face it. A lot of times when they're stuck, they want something opposite of their partner and they don't want to say it. So they keep experiencing themselves consciously as just not knowing, when they actually know an answer.
I want to start with a quote from your book, The Baby Decision. And the quote is this, quote, "The word decide comes from a Latin root meaning to cut away from. Thus, decision-making by its very nature involves loss. We have to give up one or more options while at the same time grasping another." And my understanding in doing research for this conversation is that you've been involved in the subject of trying to help people decide whether or not to have children for decades. I think 40 years or more at this point.
45 years. I'm 75 and I started when I was 30.
Incredible. Why don't we start there? I would love to get the story as to what made you interested in the subject in the first place.
Okay. Well, when my husband and I had been dating for about a year or a little over, he took me out to a wonderful dinner out of town and proposed to me. And I was thrilled and I was excited, but I actually said no. I said no because he comes from a large Italian family. I come from a small Jewish family. And it was so clear how important being a father was to him. And I had just spent the summer with a really, really spoiled group of 15-year-old campers, girl campers. And my favorite time of the day was at night when they were asleep. And even though I really loved and had great friendships with the other camp counselors, I chose to spend most of my evening time alone, just enjoying the peace and quiet. And I was thinking about going to graduate school and academia to be a PhD literature professor. And I was at Michigan State, the only woman professor there. Not only didn't have children, she wasn't married. And so I had no role models. Basically, what happened, it was so interesting, too, because Rocco was so sure that by loving him and by spending a few more years together, I would automatically want to have a child. And I said, well, that could happen, but I just can't promise that. And I don't want to deprive you of a child. I also don't want to have a child for you if I don't think I want to do it. So we spent about 18 months between when he proposed to me and when we actually got engaged, during which we had some really, really long, great conversations about, you know, parenthood, family, what the meaning of life, looking at a future together. So that was a really interesting part because we got to know each other better than we had before. They were really deep conversations. So I found that very interesting. And I discovered that it wasn't so much that I was sure I didn't want to be a mother. What I needed was role models. So this was 1969, 1970. So this was just the very beginning of the women's movement. So at that point, none of the feminist scholars or leaders that I admired and participated with had children at that point. You know, 10 years later, most of them did, but not at the time. So what helped me was getting, since I was the youngest child in the family and didn't like babysitting, I didn't have that much experience with children. So spending more time with children, teaching in a daycare center, I talked to a lot of mothers who were either graduate students in academia or they were professors, and asked them how they felt. Did they feel like having a child or children was too much? And they all said variations on, this is an incredibly busy time. This is an incredibly hard time. But there is so much pleasure in raising these children. And so it's worth it to have this suffering when during an intense time of our careers, to look at the whole life pattern of enjoying having a family life. So that was what I needed so that I could imagine that I could have a career and also be a mother and not lose myself. So the fact that that was such an interesting time in our relationship with a threat that we might break up, but also our feeling, you know, our love and connection and trying to figure out, is there a way to make this work? It was a kind of transformation for me. And when we got married, we went to live in Brazil because Rocco was doing dissertation research there. And we knew a few couples of young children, both Brazilians and people were expats like us. But our best friends were a couple that were disagreeing about whether or not to have a child. And I was just so fascinated, you know, as a similar dilemma. And you can't have a child in even years and be child-free in odd-numbered years. You can't divide, you can't have half a child. So how do people do this? I was just fascinated. So my ears would always perk up when people were making these decisions. And I discovered by reading about it and thinking about it that a lot of people had this on their minds. And at the time, after we came back from Brazil, we were living in Nashville, which was and still is a fairly conservative city, at least socially conservative and religiously conservative. And I decided to do one workshop on the topic for the Nashville YWCA. This was in 1978. And the local newspaper did an article. Lots of people signed up for the workshop. And all of my colleagues, I'm a mental health professional, I forgot to say that. All of my colleagues said that their practices were full of professional couples who were tearing their hair out because they didn't know how to make the decision. And not necessarily disagreeing with each other, but just not knowing how to make the decision. And that they, my professionals, my colleagues, had no idea what to say to them. And so I said to myself, if here in Nashville, Tennessee, there are this many couples that are not just automatically having kids, but really questioning it, there must be so many more all over the country. So that's when I started researching it, interviewing people, and so on, and decided to make a career of it.
Yeah, brilliant. And it's always stupefied me that, you know, you make, I think, this argument in the book, and I've heard you talk about this in some of your interviews, that this is the, you know, largely most important question people ever make. And our society has so much allocated time and attention and resources for people, for example, making a decision about where they're going to go to college, but very little in terms of resources for how to decide, a question of this kind of gravity. And I'd love to put it to you, because I know a lot of what I see in your work is about trying to get inner clarity on what an individual really wants and honoring that.
Yes.
And it makes sense. You may have already just stated this, but for yourself, if you remember a moment, and maybe it really was just simply getting role models to be able to converse with and get their opinion on. But for you, I know, I think you have two children.
Yes.
What is that story? If there's any more to add to that about how you learned how to address that yourself, it sounds like your husband was on board from the jump. But for yourself, how did you come to peace with a decision that you really were excited about?
Well, I think it was a combination of the fact that I really loved him and I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him. So I was certainly motivated to see if I might be comfortable saying yes. But I think it was the combination of the experience of directly working with young children, 3 and 4 and 5 year olds, and seeing how charming they were and how much fun they could be. And how much more fun it was to interact with them than the spoiled 15-year-old campers that I had worked with the summer before. And getting the role models of women who were doing both, raising kids and involved in their careers. And even though they knew it was a stressful time, they were still glad that they were doing it. So I think that combination of role models and getting a sense of how some people were living their lives, as well as direct experience with children. I think those three things just kind of came together. So I just started to say, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah. I know a comment that I have seen in relation to your book and your reviews is that I think people have really respected and appreciated that it is largely neutral in the outcome. And I think for a lot of women, we were talking about Orna Dinath a little bit before we started recording the conversation, that I think for people that may be fairly clear that having kids is not for them, having a neutral text to consult and exercises to go through is very helpful in not pressuring someone in one specific direction. And this may be a pretty good time to talk about what you've learned in your many decades of what has helped people gain. I defined decision at the beginning of the conversation as it is defined in the book. But what has really, in your experience, helped people in terms of exercises determine for themselves what they really want? I think the audience that will watch this will be particularly interested in these subjects.
So I'm going to start with, since you were talking about people responding to my book, the interesting thing about my book is, as you've said, it's neutral. And I, both from reviews and people contacting me directly, many people who've made either choice have thanked me. But what has really stood out is I have gotten more thanks and more effusive thanks from people choosing to be child-free. And I think the reason for that is that there's still so much social pressure and prejudice. And the fact that I am a parent myself, people have been able to use that as, well, Merle isn't justifying her own living or her own lifestyle. She really values this, and she can talk about working with a lot of people who are living really good lives with this. And a lot of people have used it with parents or partners who absolutely wanted to have a child and didn't understand why they themselves wanted to be child-free or whatever, that seeing the research studies that I quoted and examples of people living, you know, good lives child-free gave them more ability to say, this is for me. But so I'm writing a new book on the topic. And one of the main points that I'm making is child-free should be the default. Instead of assuming that everybody's going to have children and that decide not to is this really strange, unusual, possibly not mentally healthy choice, we should start with the idea that being child-free is the default, and that only people who are really excited about parenthood decide to do it. And the reason that's so important is not only that it gives people permission to see what they want, but it means that people who are ambivalent but then decide to have a child are really having to state, why do they want to be parents? What appeals to them about it? And their partner may have completely other ideas. So they get to know each other better. And some people have told me, for instance, well, we decided to have a child, but then we ran into infertility and then we had a miscarriage. And because we had specified this, we had made a decision rather than just having kids, because that's what people do. We were so in touch with our values and talking to each other about that, that it got us through some of those tough times. So I think everybody benefits from being careful, and that everybody benefits from assuming that child-free is the default and that only people who are excited about parenthood decide to do it.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that was actually, I had taken a note of that very point from you before. And I can hear people who are maybe more inclined to encourage people to have kids who hear this conversation to want to respond about the meaninglessness, the selfishness, the self-centeredness that comes with the desire or the conclusion to not want to continue a family line. And I don't think, in my experience, there's a whole lot of space, even in the modern internet, for role models or an articulation of why some people may not want to go down that road. And maybe it makes sense to have you talk a little bit about that very point you just made about why you think, in your judgment, not having kids should be the default. I think, like, I tend to agree with that. There isn't typically a encouragement for many other things, that people must, for example, become a doctor or a lawyer. And there does seem to be more of a cultural pressuring to become parents, which it to some degree is understandable if you yourself are the child of parents who have put a lot of time and effort into raising you. But maybe we can just back up and have you speak a little bit more about that very point, about why you've made that starting point so clear in your own work that the default in your mind should be not having kids, not the inverse, which seems to be even now the more cultural zeitgeist that we live and breathe in.
Well, I think it's a terrible mistake, and particularly in the context of how many people who really did not want to have children, and Orna Donaith's book, Regretting Motherhood, you know, is totally focused on that. People wind up having kids because that's what people are supposed to do. Maybe their partner pressured them. Maybe their parents pressured them. Maybe they had a sibling who was raising a baby and said, oh, let's have cousins together, et cetera, et cetera. There's just, but the reality is that unless people really have thought about what parenthood would mean to them, and feel that they have the time, the energy, the money, and the desire, should be free to decide not to have a child. And the idea that not having children is selfish is a terrible and inaccurate stereotype. When I first started writing The Baby Decision and interviewing people, I read a number of research studies that showed that most child-free people were doing some kind of volunteer work or something in their profession for society that they would not have been able to do if they were parents. For instance, a psychotherapist might work with the most mentally ill children, doing research or treating them or both. And those people, when they talk about choosing to be child-free, would say, if I had to go home to my mentally healthy, screaming, thrashing toddler at night and on weekends, I would not be able to work with these particular people. It would be too much. And so it's by not having children that they're able to do that. And a lot of people choose not to have children because they are so dedicated to do something that matters to them. You know, a lot of people are involved with the environment and very concerned about that. And whether that is their profession, that they're an environmental scientist or political advocate or whatever, or whether it's their evening volunteer work or whatever, most people really do something that they care about, that society benefits from. And society even benefits from role models. Kids should not grow up thinking that they have to have a child, whether they want to or not. They should grow up knowing it's possible to have a really wonderful life without children, and that people who choose not to have children have opportunities that parents don't.
I said this to Orna when we were talking, I think the first time, that in my mind, part of the reason why, you know, so many people that I feel like exist in our culture feel, you know, guilty or ashamed, or that they're a disappointment to friends and family if they decide not to have kids, is in part because there aren't that many cultural role models of a positive figure or figures that have made that decision and been, you know, a noble, admirable person, and that's not particularly salient or easy to identify for many people. And I wanted to put this question to you that, you know, in your decades of experience, what in your mind are maybe the kind of people or the right reasons for someone to choose not to have a kid? It may be as simple as just knowing that that is not, the desire is not there. But in your mind, if you could paint a picture of a story of meaningful lives, happy lives that you've seen of people that have opted not to go down the road of having kids, I would love to hear any stories that might come to mind.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that. But remind me if I don't remember to talk about some great podcasts and books that are providing great child-free role models.
Sure.
Women and men. So I'm sorry, I forgot the question.
Well, any examples or stories from your career of people that, you know, in your mind are, you know, individuals you would want as friends and neighbors, that are high functioning people that just decided that this, that having kids was not for them, for them. Any stories or people that come to mind that might act as role models in your perspective?
Yes. Well, a lot of people are artists. A lot of people are research scientists. And one thing that really appeals to me about choosing to be child-free is that they're often mavericks, even though it's a maverick kind of thing to do, even if you've lived a very traditional life and worry about disapproval. Even just deciding to say, I'm not going to have a child is a very brave, rebellious kind of thing to do. But a lot of people who choose to be child-free from childhood question what parents and teachers said. Well, why is there only one way of living a life? Why can't you do it like this? Those kinds of things. And so experiences of courage and creativity and risk-taking that, may have made trouble for them as young children in school, you're supposed to conform or whatever, but people who think differently, and we all benefit from people who think differently and role model for us.
Yeah, I know. I think it was phrased in your book, the difference between making, I think you phrase it as a growth decision and a safety decision. And I'd never quite heard it put this way, that for some people, the growth decision really is to not have kids.
Yes.
I don't know if you still agree with that, but if you do, I'd be curious to know in what, sort of framework for you might that be true for someone, that the growth decision really is to, maintain a child-free life.
So one example that comes to mind is that a lot of times women who are dissatisfied with their jobs and ambivalent about parenthood and haven't actually decided to be a mother will wind up deciding to have a child and get pregnant as their next step. It's a bridge and it's escape from their job. Hmm. And it answers the question, even though they may not be answering the question properly. And if that person has artistic talent, maybe studied art in college, maybe even has an MFA, but has worked, 7 years in the business world or whatever, and is thinking, if I don't have a child, I could get more education, I could write a novel, and so on. So it could be resistance to the suffering that would be involved in the risk-taking, even though it would lead to the best decision for them. Hmm. So that's a good example of that.
Yeah. I know we talked. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so a lot of people who are pronatalists would say the only growth decision is to have a child because that's how you grow up. But that's absolutely not true. And for many people, the growth is choosing what's right for them and putting their time and energy into the things that they enjoy most, which are also their best contributions to society. Hmm.
I think I heard this in one of the interviews I was listening to in preparation for this chat, that I don't know if this is still true, but I think if I remember correctly, one of your daughters has kids, or one of your kids has kids, and the other had decided to be child free.
Yes.
And I would love to hear from a mother's perspective what that's like. I mean, I think probably just culturally, my gut reaction is you must be disappointed in that, but I'm sure that's probably not correct at the end of the day. I'd love to give you some space to talk about what that has been like for yourself, watching one of your kids have kids and one not.
So it's very interesting to me. I really feel as if I'm just really happy for both of my daughters, and they made the choice that was right for them. It's really funny. Neither one of them asked me for any help in making their decisions. You can understand that, they've got to make their own decisions. They did read the book. But at any rate, each one of them made the decision that was best for them. And they are living, really, really great lives. So my daughter, Marcella, is a reporter and an author, and she has a son who is 10 years old. There's also risk-taking and being a maverick in that she and her husband decided to have only one child, which really made sense for them in terms of how involved they are in their careers and the fact that they wanted to be very, very hands-on in raising their child. So that's worked out really well for them. Vanessa and her wife, Cindy, are theater people. And they have an off-Broadway theater company called White Horse Theater Company. And that has been a big part of their lives. So the nights and weekends have gone to theater. And if they had a child, they wouldn't have been able to continue doing that. So that's the life that has worked best for them. And very interestingly, so you've had some contact with Vanessa because Vanessa does some of my arrangements for talks like this. So Vanessa is actually she's just recently become a life coach, and I am training a number of young women and perhaps men. I haven't found the men yet, but I'm training young people to do my work and obviously using their personality and their talents. But a lot of people have approached me and said, I want to learn from you. And fortunately, I'm in good health, but I'm 75 years old, so I'm not going to live forever. So a great irony and pleasure for me is that my child-free daughter is helping people decide whether or not to have children. And although people who are leaning child-free are certainly happy to be working with her, she's totally supportive of people having children too. So she has the time and energy to put into a new career. She was in arts administration before a fundraiser for Columbia University. She has the ability to give that her all because she's not raising a child of her own. So that's worked out very nicely for them.
Very cool. I would love to give a little bit of time to talk about suggestions of what you might say to, let's say, you know, a straight couple who are ambivalent about whether to have kids, and what you have found to be helpful just as a, you know, practical instructions of trying to get some clarity on what people really want. And I know you go through in your book a lot of various exercises that might be helpful to consider in trying to make a clear decision that kind of endures with an individual. But I'd love to have you speak at whatever length you would like about practical advice or suggestions you would have to a couple or an individual to try to get clear on this subject.
Sure. Well, the first thing is, I think it's really important that if you are part of a couple, that each of you does your own work. Because although many couples have used the exercises and the baby decision together, it can be too hard if you're leaning in the other direction, or you have concerns that your partner thinks should not be concerns or whatever. So I encourage people, whether they're using my book and doing the exercises in my book or doing other kinds of soul searching, to spend some time on their own doing some of these exercises and then reconvene and share their experiences. And that works out really well. And sometimes people, especially men, think, well, I'm willing to go either way, so I don't really have to do any work. But the reality is that if they don't know why they want to be child-free, or they don't know why they want to have a child, problems are going to come up as the couple starts actualizing that life together that could have been anticipated, and maybe they would have made the opposite decision if they had known. So it's really important for people to do their own work. And, you know, an example is, let's say, a man who wants to be child free, and he knows that his wife, his partner, is ambivalent. There are many reasons she wants to be child free too. He can just kind of encourage her. Well, look, you know, we can have a good life. Let's look at what would be good about it, and so on. But if he does some exercises where he can really clarify what it means to him to be child free, the spontaneity, the ability to work 90 hours a week on a project for a few months. Obviously, if they do that for a lifetime, it's not good for the relationship. But the ability to really get very involved in something, the ability to be able to spontaneously say, oh, there's this incredible volunteer work retreat that we could go do in Latin America. Let's do it. And particularly Sometimes when people don't understand why their partner wants to be child-free, if they realize that one of the reasons they fell in love with their partner is that their partner was so dedicated in their career, they can see that as part of wanting to be child-free rather than you're just not willing to do this or you're not willing to look at it or whatever. So it really helps for both partners to know the pros and cons of each decision and to be able to anticipate that.
What tend to, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so I was just going to give some examples of exercises. So one exercise, So I actually decided to write this book because at the time that I started doing my first workshop, I realized that all the women's magazines had articles that had questions like, would you rather spend the weekend in the Caribbean or change dirty diapers? These questions are ridiculous. Nobody wants to change diapers rather than lie on the beach. So they were really, really not very useful. And then there are other ones that were pros and cons, and it was, you know, about money and finances and, you know, that kind of thing. And what I really felt was that if people, you have to be intellectual, you have to look at pros and cons. You have to look at, can we afford this? Does it work with our lives and so on? But if you only go by the practical and you're not finding out, how do I feel about this? What do I want? And if I'm ambivalent, what are the attractions and what are the things that repulse me? You don't have enough information to go on. So I wrote this book with the self-exploration exercises as a way of giving people a chance to make discoveries about how they really feel. So one example is yucky babies. And it's you know, remembering your childhood. Did you babysit for a sibling? Did you babysit for another child? Were you just around kids that were drooling or pooping or just generally being disgusting or screaming or whatever? And that can allow people to remember some visceral experiences that they've completely forgotten. That doesn't mean that they can't decide to have a child, but that kind of imagination, sensory imagination, imagining you're in the scene, can be really, really useful. So that's one example. But also visualization is good. So I have an exercise called rocking chair, where you imagine that you're a healthy 70-year-old and looking back on your life. And in one scenario, you had a child and the other one you didn't. What did you like and what did you not like about your life? So these things allow people to connect to the unconscious, just imagination, aspects of themselves that maybe they experience in meditation or, you know, in a wonderful sexual encounter or some kind of spiritual experience, but not in everyday life. So if they connect to those, they're getting really useful information. And as people are getting some sense of what they want or don't want, but if they're still ambivalent, there are two exercises that a lot of people have found really helpful. One of them is an empty chair technique, in which they sit in one chair and say, I'm going to have a child no matter what. We don't even need to have a conversation. And then they go sit in the other chair and say to that part of themselves, are you crazy? You know, what about freedom? What about this? What about that? And the idea is not to be polite, not to be intellectual. They are going to have a shouting argument with each other about this is what we want. This is what's best for us. And by listening to the two different voices, they're able to get a sense of how loud each voice is. Is one stronger than the other? When they sit in one chair, does it feel like they're really themselves and feeling authentic in their body and mind and voice, and in the other one not? So they get a lot of information about that. And sometimes people will say, well, we're still stuck. We read the book last year. I say, do this technique again. It's going to be a completely different experience. You know, one voice is going to be louder than the other. It's going to be stronger and, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a very useful exercise. And as people start getting their answer, they often don't want to hear from the other side. Don't remind me of everything that would be great about being child-free if we're about to have a child. But we can't do that. We can't sweep those doubts under the rug, because everything that the other voice is still saying about why they want the opposite is all the clues that you and your partner need to enjoy the life you're choosing. So if you're going to be parents, you need to know exactly what matters most, silence or meditation, freedom, spontaneity, whatever it is that you're most worried about giving up. That's what, in the process of planning for parenthood and getting pregnant, you need to talk about. And if you're going to be child-free, but there are things that you really are going to miss a lot, by naming those and knowing exactly what they are, not just not experiencing parenthood or FOMO, but holding a baby. I love children's books, you know, reading with a child in my lap, being playful, even though we're not going to have a kid. So by listening, still listening to the voice that isn't winning, it's just a great opportunity to do what I call stealing from the other side. And then the other exercise that a lot of people find helpful is to write a journal with different color ink pens. And I really emphasize, you are forbidden to write in the journal unless you have something to say, because people drive themselves crazy. They'll write 5 pages one day, 10 days the next, bore themselves to death because they're saying the same thing over and over again and give up. But if you only sit down and write in the journal when you say, we visited our friends who have a 4-year-old, he was so charming. So you would write, let's say, blue ink for yes, for a child, and maybe orange ink for child free or whatever. So what happens over a few weeks is you can see the content, you can see your decision begin to change just by looking at the ink without even reading the words, which is so much fun and such a surprise. So those are two examples of where we're using psychological techniques to help bring out answers that people don't get to when they're just angry at themselves and tangled in the confusion.
And do you find that, let's say people continuously feel like they're ambivalent, that, you know, even after a year or two of trying to work through this, that, you know, as you said earlier in the conversation, it's your view that the default should probably be not to have kids.
Yes.
I'd love to put that to you and just get any additional thoughts you may have on that idea.
So, I guess one of the things that I say to people is it's so hard to be a parent, even if you 100% want it. Kids are wonderful and fabulous, but there are going to be days when they're screaming. There are going to be days when you've waited for your favorite rock group to come over from England and you've got these tickets and your child gets sick or your babysitter gets sick. And you know, at that moment, you wish you didn't have a child. So if you are ambivalent, is it really worth it to go through the suffering part of parenting? So I really want them to think about that. The other thing is that sometimes when people are stuck, and I'm writing more about this in the new book that I'm working on, Baby or Child Free. Sometimes when people are stuck, they actually know their answer and they don't want to face it. A lot of times when they're stuck, they want something opposite of their partner and they don't want to say it. So they keep experiencing themselves consciously as just not knowing when they actually know an answer that's going to be a problem, for instance. And the other thing that I find is this, that death is really a part of making this decision. Hmm. You know, one of the things I always say about this decision is not just about baby or no baby. It's who am I? Who's my partner? Who are we as a couple? And what hasn't happened yet between now that we want to happen between now and when we die? So we're really talking about death and the fact that time is limited. And the frustration is, if I want to live a great child-free life and I also want to live a parenting life, I'm not going to live long enough to do both for years and years and years. So for some people, it's actually facing the fact that they're going to die someday that enables them to say yes, and coming back to the forever yes, there must be a no. Decisions are so expensive because they cost you everything else. Facing the fact that death is in the background and asking what is going to be most meaningful to us as we make this choice. So sometimes the conversations about death actually enable people to make a decision.
That makes a lot of sense. And I wonder, it's funny because to me, it's, I think, very difficult for people that don't have kids to understand what it's really like day in and day out to have that level of responsibility and accountability for its benefits and and difficulties to do that. And I don't know if it's your view that, you know, really just imaginative exercises are the best you can do to try to simulate what that reality is like, or if there are other exercises like trying to be around your nieces and nephews more.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The book is not supposed to be a substitute for other experiences. Mm. Definitely getting experience being around children. But that also can be difficult because let's say you are trying to decide whether or not to have a child and you borrow a child who is at an age of stranger anxiety and they're going to scream the entire time their parents are gone. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you would hate being parents. It means that you borrowed a child at a time that the child was so stressed out that you couldn't enjoy being around them. So getting different experience, volunteer work, spending time hanging around with families, asking them what they like and don't like about parenthood can be very useful. And books like Jennifer Senior's All Joy and No Fun talk about, you know, what it's really like. So things like that can be very useful. And certainly for people who are leaning towards child-free, spending time around people who've made that choice and getting, you know, exposed to, you know, different ways of living that life are really important.
For people that aren't parents and may not have access to nieces and nephews or kids in general, what is it that you think more than anything, if there were a top one or two truths about parenthood, do they not really, in your experience, tend to understand or be able to comprehend before they actually become them? I don't know if anything comes to mind, but just in general, what is it that people tend to get wrong about the reality of being a mom or a dad? What that you've experienced, if anything, is top of mind there?
So there are a couple of books. There's a book called The Power of Showing Up by Daniel Siegel, who has many, many wonderful books about parenting. And I think it just gives a great example of when kids are suffering, how you can be there for them, how you let yourself empathize with them, and how you kind of quiet your own mind to listen and so on. So it both is an example of what can be very satisfying about being a parent, but it can also make a reader go, gulp, I can't imagine, I wouldn't want to do that. There's also a book, I think it's called Parenthood by Margot Sutherland, which has beautiful pictures. I think it's one of those DK publisher books. And she shows a lot of experiences where people are enjoying their children and also where children are struggling. And she talks about how the parents deal with that. So I think that a book like that also can help people imagine themselves as parents.
One of my favorite quotes from you that I came across in preparation for this interview is one that I want to read out, and I want to give you a little time to explain what you meant by this. And this is from you, quote, "As a child-free person, you have a right to be ordinary." I really love that line, but I wanted to put that to you and give you some space to kind of articulate what you mean by that.
Okay, it's a really interesting question that's coming up because of what's been going on politically with the comments about child-free people being irresponsible. Ironically, that has led to a lot more press for people who've chosen to be child-free to talk about and show how they're living their lives. But the punitive idea that people who choose not to have a child are getting away with something, and they have to do something outstanding, a scientific accomplishment, a book, create a foundation, or whatever, to make up for not having a child is really unreasonable. We have a right to be here as we are. And really, ironically, a lot of child-free people do extraordinary things, but they don't do them because people are pressuring them. In fact, feeling that pressure can inhibit their creativity and their risk-taking. We have to say to everybody, you don't have to do anything. And that gives those people the ability to concentrate enough to figure out what they want to do. And some people decide to be child-free because they already know they're doing something else. Many people rule out parented because they know it's not for them and don't know what they're going to do next. And they often feel that pressure from themselves as well as from family and friends. So just saying you have a right to be here just as you are can be very liberating. I think it's a really, really important point.
I do too. And I'd love to address this to someone that might come across this interview at some point who, you know, might be from a family where they know that they'll only be accepted if they decide to have kids, whether they're a man or a woman. And what you would say to someone who is in that kind of an environment that has no support for them as an individual, if they end up doing what they want to do. We talked to a little bit earlier in the conversation about whether people, you know, are just, if they're unclear about what they want, or if they're just ashamed of what they want. And for people that may be watching this that know definitively this is not something that they're wired to do, or that there's no desire for them to do, but they're in some sort of a community or a place in the world where that is not acceptable, how would you address that person? What kind of recommendations or just feedback would you give to someone in that situation?
Okay. Before I even talk about how they would communicate with their family or their community, if it's a church or some other kind of communal group, as well as the individual family, before they even try to do that, I would encourage them to find role models, to be, you know, online or listening to podcasts or online support groups or local support groups of people who've decided to be child-free. They need people who understand what they're choosing and who understand how much it hurts and how much it angers them to have their family not understand. So from that foundation, it's easier to talk. I also recommend that people have, even if they're not in any kind of therapy or coaching, to have one or two sessions with someone, a professional, they don't have to be child-free themselves, but who, like me, supports those choices, to brainstorm how you're going to tell your family. What do you know about their typical reactions? What have they said so far? And how might you be able to present that? And also to just know in advance, you're not a failure if you don't convince your family, if their minds are made up. And it's more important to them that you conform to what they think people's lives are supposed to be like than it is to honor who you are and what you need and what you can contribute. You may have to sacrifice their approval. But what works the best is saying, this is how I've thought about it. This is what makes sense for me. I ask you to try to understand this, even though it's not what you expected. I'm sorry I'm disappointing you if I'm not giving you a grandchild, you know, all of those kinds of things. And the other thing that's really important about that is that one of the best ways to convince family and friends to accept you're being child-free is once you've made that decision and you are living out all the joys and all the power of your child-free life, and you are shining because you're doing what you believe in and spending your time in your own way. Many parents will see that you're happy and they will back up and realize, yes, even though we tried to persuade you to do something else, this does seem to be working out well for you. Another thing is that a lot of child-free people being mavericks, this happens especially with child-free women, they will say, Dad, do you remember when I was 10 and you told me not to worry about what people said women should do? You know, you encouraged me to try out for soccer. You encouraged me to go for science. Just all these ways that you liked my feistiness and encouraged me to make decisions for myself. Well, this is an example of what I have learned from you and I'm now applying to my life. And I get it. That you wish that hadn't happened. You didn't realize when you were encouraging me that you might wind up with fewer grandchildren. But try to understand that. Anything that where the parents can take pride in being respectful in other aspects of their lives, where maybe they decided to go to a different college or profession or whatever, can be helpful.
That is so well put. I'd love to flip this around and talk about scenarios where, you know, in your decades of experience, you have met people or come across people that, you know, in your mind really should become parents. I've certainly met people in my own life that, from the first time I met them, it was obvious that the most important thing in their life, something that they had always wanted from the earliest time they can remember, was to be a parent. And, you know, I think we've talked some about people who are considering being child-free or, are potentially going down that path. I'd love to talk about the scenarios and the people that, in your mind really do justify becoming parents, where it can be, you know, a real celebration of honoring a deep internal desire to do something with one's life. And you can take that however you would like. If it's you know, consulting that sort of inner knowing that someone may have had from a very early age, but just given that the default, and I tend to agree with this general outlook, that the default should be no, but that, you know, when it's a yes, it can be such a beautiful thing to watch. Yes. And to see someone honor. I'd love to give a little time to that in how you think about when it is a real green light for someone to go ahead and do this and maybe have quite a large family.
So sometimes people already know that they want to have a child when they come to see me, but they have a lot of questions about how to do it, whether they'll do it well, what will happen to their relationships. So some people know they want a family, and as you say, might be planning more than one child, but they don't want to just go into it not prepared, particularly if they have different ideas about parenthood. They really want some help with getting involved. And so I'm actually going to give you some examples of where people are leaning but not sure, and the role that I and or their partner might do to encourage that. So when people disagree about whether or not to have a child, three things can happen. They can break up, which is unfortunate, but does sometimes happen. They can decide to go ahead and have a child despite one person's qualms, or they can decide to be child-free, and the person who wanted a child can grieve not getting to be a parent, and so on. But for some people I use a scale from 1 to 10, and actually 0. So 0 is a person that knows that they would never have a child under any circumstance, and they would divorce anyone, no matter how much they love them, if they were insisting on having a child. And 10 is someone, and we stereotype women, but it can be men as well, who feel they were put on earth to have a child, that it's absolutely essential, and that if they married or got together with someone who originally said we can go either way, but then decided not to, they would divorce. But most people are somewhere in between. So for instance, let's take a man who knows he wants kids, and maybe he is an 8. So we're talking about a straight couple. And the woman is a 4. She might be someone who's interested and curious about having a child, and she might really want to be child-free because of anxieties about parenthood, because of big commitments and being afraid of not having enough time for the child or whatever. So in a situation like that, the couple can talk about the man of the couple could say, what could I do for you to make parenthood more attractive to you? And that might be agreeing to be 50-50 with the responsibilities, or even staying home and being primary parent for a year, and so on. Or let's say the person who wants to be child-free loves to meditate. I want you to guarantee me that I'll have an hour a day to meditate no matter what else is going on. So sometimes those kinds of conversations can enable someone to decide to have a child. There are also people who are single and considering parenthood. There are people who are gay, and even though it's much more common for gay people to have kids, there's still, because there's prejudice against gay people anyway, they still may be dealing with prejudice questions, as well as disagreeing about whether or not to have a child. So those are some situations where people may need to know more about and have more role models for other people who are gay parents, whether they did it through adoption or through surrogacy, for single women to meet and get to know and see the family patterns of women doing it on their own. So I would not just be talking to them directly about encouraging them to listen to themselves, but I'd also be encouraging them to get the information from books and podcasts, the role modeling, the friendship and the support, and so on. One interesting thing we haven't touched on, and I do want to come back, I know we're getting towards the end, I do want to come back and talk about role models that people can find from books and online to be child-free. And now, of course, I've forgotten where, what I wanted to say is one of the most fascinating questions that comes up, and I see this a lot on Reddit, on FenSitter, as well as from my direct clients in my Facebook group, is someone who's always been sure they wanted to be child-free, and they've met a partner who they totally love. It's a completely different experience from any relationships they've had in the past. And they're actually able to imagine that it could be fun to raise a child with that partner. They can envision, you know, what the child will look like, genetic combinations and all those kinds of things. And they will ask, am I crazy? Would I only be doing this to please the other person? And is it going to wind up being a disaster? And my answer to that, in the way we're talking about encouraging people to consider parenthood, is let's look at aspects of you that in your past life that are nurturing. You know, maybe you, you know, you're a lawyer and you're nurturing 20-year-olds. Maybe you like to cook. Maybe you have a special relationship with a niece. So rather than feeling like I'm totally crazy to be thinking about this, if we can look at aspects of their lives where they did nurture before, even though they never imagined being a parent, they can think about that with more confidence than I'm only doing this for my partner.
I like that. And, you know, I'd love to talk, as you said, I know we're getting a little bit close to the end of the conversation, but, you know, you've been at this now for so long. And to me, a lot of this work is, I really appreciate, first of all, just how neutral you seem to be and just supportive to people in getting in touch with what really works for them and then honoring that for any individual. And I would love to know if you think culturally we've gotten better at even broaching this subject. I mean, we talked earlier in the conversation about how it's amazing to me that this isn't significantly more important and more prioritized as something that people really give the time and resources it really merits in my mind. And that your work is largely a consciousness-raising exercise for people to really be more in touch with the impact of their decisions and how it affects their lives. Do you think we are better at this? And where can we improve? How do you see that just culturally for the U.S. and maybe the Western world in general?
Well, I think we are better at it. I just have to say, I understand now that the Soviet Union is forbidding people from advocating a child-free life. So, yeah, clearly there are cultures that are going in the opposite direction. But I think that there, you know, there has been such a movement in the last 50 years for people choosing what works for them rather than doing what society has always expected. And there are more books and there are more podcasts. There are more different ways that people are getting help with decision making. And also, I think the environment is so big because, you know, with all the concerns about climate change, many people who might not have thought about not having kids before are thinking about it now. So I think that the climate concerns are one thing that is making people think more about it.
What else are we not talking about related to this subject? And maybe this might be a good place for us to close, but what else, you know, have I not brought up? Have you not been asked in prior interviews that, if anything comes to mind related to this whole subject that you think is worth a little bit of space, whether that are points from your book that have not been teased out publicly, whether there's just some phenomenon you're seeing culturally that, you know, you'd like to address. Would love to close with anything else that you might like to spend a little time speaking about, given your decades of work on this subject.
Well, I think the biggest thing is risk taking. People are frightened of whichever decision they make because they're taking a risk, and they can grow from that. But more than that, I think sometimes people sort of take life for granted. For instance, one of the reasons that I discourage people leaning child-free from just drifting into being child-free is I've heard people say, if I had known 10 years ago that I was going to be child-free, I would already have my PhD rather than just finding the courage to start graduate school. And I just think that it's very easy for people, and this is true of parents as well. Parents can say, well, you know, children are just going to take up so much time. So why even say that I want to write a novel? Why even say I'd like to start a foundation since I'm not going to have time? I want people to really listen to themselves, not just discover yes or no, but what else might they care about and what else might they want to do? And a lot of times people think, well, you know, I'm going to be older and, but so many older people do things that they didn't do when they were younger. So I really want people to think about what is making my life as meaningful as possible. And for people who are child-free, I really, really want them to think about what can they do with the time, the energy, and their relationship, and not waste away with what's fun and familiar. Of course, if you love going on vacations, continue. Of course, if you love sleeping late on Sunday mornings. But, you know, sometimes child-free people have been, you know, they've had sex the same way every time. They have all these same routines. And the things that they don't know or experience about each other, they may not have the same psychological intimacy that they had before. And, you know, that could be going to a couple workshops. It could just be spending more time together in a different way. There's a writer called Catherine Earnshaw. She has a couple of books out, which include exercises for asking each other a question and what can we do different this week and so on. So, you know, really taking advantage of those things rather than, okay, well, we congratulate ourselves. We decided to be child-free. What might we or I regret on my deathbed or even 10 years from now that I didn't do with this child-free connection? And the other thing is people learn new things about each other if they're a couple making this decision. People learn things they never knew about their loved one's childhood or their disappointment in not getting into the college that they wanted or whatever. And there's just so much richness there that they can enjoy exploring more.
Hmm. Growth. I mean, that's what I hear in that statement is continuing to grow and to, you know, not necessarily take advantage of this new life that you've created for yourself, but just maximizing your life, making sure you're making the most of it.
And for parents being willing to do that for their kids, rather than, you know, they need to study Japanese to get into the right college. But who is my kid? What do they enjoy playing with? What questions are they asking? How can we help them develop that?
Yeah. Merle, this was lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
You're very welcome.